beautiful view of Florida now. We can see the Cape just the point.
Roger.
And at the same time, we can see Africa.
What window are you looking at?
I can see the entire Earth now out of the center window. I can see Florida, Cuba, Central America, the whole northern half of Central America, in fact, all the way down through Argentina and down through Chile.
Hey, you picked a good day for it.
That's the crew of Apollo 8, seeing the Earth from their window after orbiting the moon for the first time in 1968. And it still gives me goosebumps. From an early age, I was always happy to let my imagination drift and careen through space. At the time, that was easy. The first satellites went up when I was 3. John Glenn orbited the Earth when I was 7. Human beings stepped onto the moon for the first time when I was 14. I read Tom Swift and I watched Star Trek, and then graduated to 2001 A Space Odyssey and the novels of Ray Bradbury and Philip K. Dick. These days, I subscribe to Scientific American mainly to be wowed by the articles about astronomy and cosmology. And the closest I come to a regular spiritual practice is staring into the sky on clear nights. Space is, as the kids say, awesome. And for the last half millennium or so, all kinds of artists have used space as inspiration to awe and to be awed. And in turn, our real 21st century world, the actual rockets and space shuttles and space stations and extraterrestrial research projects, have been inspired and shaped by the visions of artists and storytellers. My guest today is Ann Dreehan, who has written and produced TV programs about space and conceived the film Contact in collaboration with her husband, the late Carl Sagan. She's also the former secretary of the Federation of American Scientists and now runs Cosmos Studios, a company she set up to create science-based entertainment. Annie Dreehan, welcome to Studio 360.
My pleasure.
What got you interested in space?
Actually, I remember the moment that I heard that the Russians had launched the Sputnik into space, the very first object created by humans, lofted into space. I was 8 years old. It was on the radio. And that was, of course, 1957. And it was an epiphanal moment for me because it was the first time I realized you could actually get off the planet. And, of course, I grew up in Queens, so I took the requisite trips to the Hayden Planetarium. And I weighed myself on Mars. And that was another breakthrough because it suddenly occurred to me that your weight was not a constant, that it had to do with the world that you lived on. And a series of kind of mind-opening experiences. And then I had the great good fortune to meet Carl Sagan. And Carl opened the universe for me, as he did for many hundreds of millions of people worldwide.
Or billions and billions.
And billions, I guess. And billions. I was hesitated to say that.
It's interesting that you mentioned this idea, and I remember it being striking to me as a child as well, of objects and people's weights theoretically being different on different planets, because it does give you a sense of the relativism of all of our perspectives, doesn't it? In a kind of really fundamental way.
That's what science does. And that's why I love science, is it's constantly kicking us in the teeth that way and saying we're much smaller and much less central than we'd like to think we are. And it's these series of demotions that science has given us that I think it is the reason for the great social and political trauma that we're living through right now. The kind of tension between what we know scientifically and what we want to believe.
And that's sort of been going on for a couple of hundred years.
It's been a hell of a couple of hundred years.
Why did you start Cosmos Studios?
Well, I was struck by how gifted we are as a species, as a civilization, in terms of our abilities to simulate reality on a grand scale. We have these gorgeous special effects, but we only use them mostly to blow things up. We rarely use them to convey to the widest possible public the grandeur of the universe or what science is telling us. And I was really struck by this after Carl Sagan died and in the aftermath of the work we'd done together. I wondered how it would be possible to continue this work. It didn't seem that there was anyone who had come to occupy the ecological niche that Carl had left behind. And
ecological meaning in the ecology of?
Meaning a voice of science.
Ideas.
That was poetic, that was ethical, that was filled with passion, but also good, solid, hard information. Both skepticism and wonder in equal amounts, full tilt.